The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
On 92.7 and 106 FM.
You've made it to Friday. Congratulations. This is The Money Show. I am Bruce Whitfield, and The Money Show is brought to you by APSA. Some stories are just getting started. Your story matters. APSA is a registered FSP, a financial services provider, of course. Gold and Bitcoin are stealing the show this evening. We'll look at the investment cases of both tonight on The Money Show. The gold price and the Bitcoin prices both reaching record levels this week. That comes as US job numbers continue to surprise on the upside. That is an astonishing tale, I suppose, of the unbelievable success of both of these particular asset classes. One more trusted than the other. One's been around as an asset class for about 5,000 years, I suppose, versus the other's more recent entry into the world of money and investments. Also tonight, we're going to look at a deal done by Mondi. Now, Mondi is South Africa's biggest packaging company. They make cardboard boxes and all of those sorts of things that deliveries are made in. And Mondi has just done a deal with a UK packaging business that is going to make it the biggest in the world. Then, later on, our classic cars are the focus of the Friday file. We'll play the Brutal Biz quiz tonight. And, of course, the best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been. That is all coming up on this evening's edition of The Money Show. And, yes, Howell, we're going to speak to Howell George in a moment, Director of Investments at Old Mutual. He's standing by for us on Zoom. We'll also pick up with Chris Bishop. Chris Bishop is a business journalist who we hoped to get hold of last night, but due to various complications, being in Ukraine and all, we are looking forward to catching up with him, just getting an insight from the ground in Ukraine. Greg Katzenellenbogen makes a welcome return to The Money Show. So I think I cannot believe that this is coincidental. I spent years teasing him about the gold price. Now that the gold price has more than doubled since the last time we spoke, now that the gold price is sitting at record levels, Greg is saying, I'm going to come. Going to come and talk. Of course he can. We'd love to hear from him. It's going to be great. And then Jof van Rienen, Creative Rides Director and Lead Auctioneer, is going to be talking to us about the state of luxury cars. That is what our focus is on The Money Show tonight.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
U.S. jobs numbers today, and the U.S. economy is an astonishing creator of jobs. It's a jobs-creating machine. Another 275,000 jobs created in February. There was a downward revision, though, to the January number. Now, this is interesting because it implies that things might be slowing down just a little bit. And there was a note I saw online today from a consultancy called Capital Economics saying that there is less reason now to be concerned that renewed labor market strength will drive inflation higher once again. Basically, if we translate that to English, the jobs market is cooling down. It's one of the reasons why the dollar weakened so much today. US dollar came under quite a lot of pressure. And yes, we'll pick up on that story with our commentators this evening as well. Howell George joins us this evening on what's been an extraordinary week for both gold and for Bitcoin. I'm going to talk gold with the most persistent fan of the metal I know, Greg Katzenellenbogen at Sunland Private Wealth, in just a moment. But our explainer this evening, let's try and get under the skin of a rocket of a different kind, and that's Bitcoin, which over the past month has seen its the price go stratospheric. It hit $68,000 today, or 1,265,000 rand for something that you cannot see or hold in your hand, and it still freaks me out. Bitcoin hit an all-time high earlier this week above 69,000 from a relatively recent low of 16. That was on Tuesday. Then it fell $10,000. Now it's recovered once again. Oh my goodness me. Howell George, Director of Investments at the Old Mutual Investment Group, please explain to me this sudden and vociferous and incredible recovery in the price of this thing that is invisible, intangible, and inexplicable to me, at least.
Hi, Bruce. Good evening, everyone. Well, I'll give it my best shot. So a couple of things behind it, and it touched $70,000 today, just earlier, by the way. A couple of things behind it. Generally, confidence in markets has gone up, and technology generally, and it's kind of a risk on assets that's helped. Specifically, we had, of course, the exchange-traded fund approvals in January, where BlackRock and eight others launched Bitcoin ETFs. And we've had about $70 billion flow into those ETFs. So a lot of institutional interest. And then we've got the halving of Bitcoin, which I can explain if you'd like, in April, which tends to push the price up a little bit more. And then you mentioned gold on the intro. I think we're seeing a little bit of undermining of fiat currencies. So gold and other kind of quote-unquote hard assets like Bitcoin doing, much better.
Undermining of fiat currency. So, I mean, for example, the dollar weakening today, and that gives the rand a bit of relief, but we know it's not real. The rand is perpetually weak. The dollar has been perpetually strong. But the dollar has been in retreat today because of this belief that lower interest rates are on their way and therefore there'll be less interest in the US dollar. Therefore, some of that sort of very, very hot money goes elsewhere, possibly into gold, possibly into Bitcoin.
Yes, that's right. And if you just take a step back, Bruce, I mean, there's been, give or take, $30 trillion of money printed in the last decade or so by the U.S. Federal Reserve and other central banks. That's about one-third of global GDP. And so, you know, you get more fiat currencies around, they're generally should be worth less. And so we're just starting to see some cracks in the armor there. I mean, it may be a little bit of a stretch, but we saw the Egyptian devaluation this week, Nigerian Naira, just earlier in the year. And so you're starting to see quite abrupt moves in the currency markets. And so I think kind of this money printing thing, you know, the chickens are coming home roost a little bit. And you see silver very strong, gold very strong, Bitcoin strong, Ethereum strong. So that's in the background as well. So there's a longer term kind of move at play here, which means that, you know, these again, quote unquote, hard assets may be due for, you know, continued strength for a little while.
Have you popped money into the Bitcoin ETFs yet, Howell? I mean, are you encouraging your customers to dabble in the Bitcoin ETFs? You look like a genius if you did, or have you been a little bit too circumspect for it?
Well, you know, the regulations are quite tough in this area. As you would know, Bruce, you know, listeners would know in South Africa. So from an institutional point of view, that's quite still a little bit difficult to do. You know, from a personal point of view, that's a different story. But, you know, these things are becoming more institutionalized. That's really, I think, the point from now. And so you're going to see them become a little bit more of an asset class in their own right. And you're going to see more of these things, I suspect, launching in South Africa and certainly elsewhere.
Howell George, Director of Investments at the Old Mutual Investment Group. Howell, thanks very much indeed for joining us this evening on The Money Show. We'll chat to Chris Bishop in a moment. Chris is a business journalist. We tried to connect with him last night in Ukraine. Some complications, but we'll pick up with him in just a moment. The Civil Aviation Authority has effectively shut Richards Bay Airport because its fire and rescue services aren't good enough. Authorities saying the current state disqualifies the airport from accommodating commercial airline operations. Airlink announcing suspension of flights to and from Richards Bay. The MD, Roger Foster, saying they'll resume as soon as it's legal to do so. This is an interesting bit here because most of South Africa's commercial airports are run by the Airports Company South Africa. They own them 100%. They've got a monopoly. Now, this is a municipal airport, which is interesting. It was started in 1975, but run through a concession nowadays by AXA, the Airports Company of South Africa, which runs the country's main airports. The website, of course, for the Richards Bay Airport says, with their dedicated management, we continue to uphold the highest standards in ensuring a smooth and efficient travel experience for all. Well, clearly the Civil Aviation Authority doesn't think so, and I wonder why. If fire and safety is the remit of the Airports Company South Africa, it's dropped the ball on this. Perhaps we need an explanation. Yes, something for Monday.
702.
Bruce is on The Money Show.
Well, very exciting to be on the ground in Ukraine. Chris Bishop, our old friend Chris Bishop, is a business journalist, as you'll remember him, and is finding himself in Ukraine. How on earth have you ended up there, Chris Bishop?
Well, basically, we were invited on a trip to come out here with a number of South African journalists, of which I am one. And we've been moving all over the country, Odessa to Kyiv. We've been right through towards the former occupied territories of Russia. But it's been a fascinating experience. But I'm going to tell you something now that will probably make a lot of South Africans sick. In the early days of the war, Russia rocketed the hell out of Ukraine's power generation electricity system. And it took the country 45 days, I'll repeat that, 45 days to rebuild it. And to this day, we've been all over the place, and that no one talks about power cuts in this country. It's an incredible achievement.
And before the war, or before, let's not call it a war, before the invasion, they were big exporters of electricity all over Europe. And I think they've even resumed electricity exports. A country in a war zone resuming electricity exports after having electricity infrastructure destroyed in a war, in a violent attack. It's an astonishing place. And it does suggest a certain amount of resilience, as we've seen borne out for 2 years now on the battlefields of Ukraine. And also, again, before the invasion, Ukraine being the grain basket of Europe. And how much disruption has there been to planting, to production, and to exports, Chris?
Well, we went out to some of the farms and we spoke to the farmers. They're all planting. They're struggling with fertilizers. Obviously, they have to pay to import most of it, which is in dollars, and they get local currency for their product. A lot of the guys are struggling, but it's incredible. We should mention the grain industry. The grain industry is going through a revival, which is incredible. Obviously, when the Black Sea, on the morning of the first day of the war, the Russian Navy loomed over the horizon in the port town of Odessa, and they were ready to invade and blockade, etc., etc. All grain exports were off from Odessa, but the Navy has been pushed back to the other side of the Black Sea now. 45%, apparently, according to the authorities here, of Russian shipping has been sunk. What they're doing, they're trying another route now, which hugs the coast in territorial waters of friendly states, Bulgaria, Romania, and Turkey, and it goes up through the Bosphorus. Now, they gave me the latest figures the other day. I was down at the docks talking to them. 28.5 million tons has gone out since the first shipment until March this year, which is incredible. I mean, under the grain agreement that you mentioned, only about 32 million tons was done when it was allowed. I mean, when Russian forces were letting the ships through. But you've got to understand, it's still long way from 60 million tons, which was the pre-war exports. But it seems that they've outfoxed the Russians again on that one, because they've managed to find a way through. And what it's done, apparently, it's put the price down. They said 25% increase overnight when the disruption started. The price has gone down, so the big customers who ship grain out to Africa big time, the World Food Programme, they can afford to buy more and more every month. And they reckon they're going to move about 4 million tonnes. And the government wants to move more to countries like Mozambique, Malawi, and Mauritania.
Astonishing, isn't it? And President Zelensky, I mean, he's travelling around quite a lot. Clearly not feeling the immediate pressure of the war as he was in the early days. And there's talk of a visit to Africa. May he come all the way south to meet with us or not?
Well, sure. Well, he we were with the Foreign Affairs Minister the other day, and he was saying that two things. One, they want to have a Ukraine-Africa conference in South Africa, number one. Number two, they want Zelensky to make his first ever trip to Africa, to South Africa, presumably to open that conference. And shame, I was talking to the ambassador, the South African ambassador, Shea Passu, who's just been moved here in October from Saudi Arabia. Shame, it's his last posting, and he was hoping for a comfort posting. He comes to Ukraine, the embassy's shut down, he's got a handful of staff looking after, by the way, he told me the numbers, only about 18 South Africans left in the country, yeah. But he said, like, you know, obviously had 40 to 50 rocket attacks on Kyiv in his first 3 months. And so much for a comfort posting. But it confirmed to us that, there is an invite being sought with President Cyril Ramaphosa. He said he's unlikely to even look at it before the elections, obviously, in May. But he said, certainly, they're looking at it. And certainly, from what the foreign minister was saying, they're going on a bit of a charm offensive in Africa. They're going to open up 10 new embassies across the continent to sort of try and make friends. Plus, they're looking to invest in agriculture, in joint ventures with African nations, and also things like research and creation of fertilizers. So that's what they're promising. And they said they want South African companies to get involved with the rebuilding of Ukraine. And some parts of Ukraine that I've travelled to in the last couple of weeks, certainly there's a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah, I'm sure the signs of the war must be absolutely visible everywhere. But you know what's so amazing about the little bit that I understand about Ukrainian business people and the resilience of a group of people who have been at the forefront of violent conflict for 2 years now is just an entrepreneurial spirit that I think is a lesson to all of us.
It's amazing. Yeah, no, I mean, we spoke the other night to somebody who a brewing company, and they launched a bar in the middle of the war. Not only that, when there was a drink ban and a curfew at 5 o'clock. So they managed to hold out for about 4 months. And when the curfew was lifted or put back to 11 where it is now, then they started to do business. I mean, it's unreal. I mean, their favorite beer that everybody likes there is a tomato beer, and I'm not kidding. It tastes a bit like sort of Bloody Mary with Worcestershire sauce. It's very spicy, and they call it Russian's blood. And I said it was a bit harsh on the landlord. He said, "No, well, we've been fighting them for 400 years, so why not? Cheers." But it's incredible. I mean, you get a lot of soldiers there. There's a lot of resilience. But having said that, on the other side, this is a war that is draining the people. The country hasn't got enough weapons to carry it on for long, long term. They're running out of soldiers. And a lot of people have left the country. I mean, the other day I was talking to estimates. They reckon there were 40 million people in Ukraine at the start of the war. And they reckon there's only about 25 to 28 million left. I mean, someone was saying today, anecdotally, some people are actually literally swimming rivers to get out. They fear that the government can maybe force to conscription, which would mean hundreds of thousands of people going to the army. But I don't know. You've got to hand it to this nation. They've got that spirit. They've got that. I was expecting like this terrible war psychosis we have experienced in places like Angola and the like. Yeah. And it's not like that at all here. Life goes on. People still walk around. Everybody's orderly. There's no soldiers and tanks on the streets of the capital here. Not even in Odessa to speak of, really. And bearing in mind, Odessa is pretty much in the front line, only about 50-100 kilometers away from Russian forces. So it is an incredible place to experience. And a lot is going on here.
Chris Bishop, thank you for telling it so beautifully. Chris Bishop, a business journalist in Ukraine for us this evening. Good to have you back on The Money Show. Chris Bishop.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Been a long time since we've had Greg Katzenellenbuch on. He's a senior portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. And I think you've timed this return very strategically, Greg, because I think I teased you mercilessly for about 5 years about gold below $1,000 an ounce. And you said, one day it's going to wake up. And I went, yes, of course, Greg. One day gold's going to wake up. Of course it is, Greg. And here we sit with gold at $2,150 an ounce. An ounce of gold at 40, I mean, what a Krugerrand would cost you, what, 40,000 rand or thereabouts. It's been an astonishing bounce in the gold price. We've had a theory from Howell George at Old Mutual this evening as to what he thinks is driving gold and cryptocurrency. I wonder what your thought is.
So my look, you know, Bruce, they don't call it a chameleon effort for nothing, but sometimes it's a risk effort, other times it's a safe haven asset. But the one thing that's constant with gold is that it can spend years moving sideways, but when it breaks out, the breakout is quite violent. Why this time it might have some staying power as well is because, generally speaking, every time gold has been breaking out, there's been a lot of buying, especially in the ETF, the GLD ETF. This time those flows are negative, but the gold price continues to rise. So you have new and you've got depressed, that means that this gold price could still go much, much higher. I think, you know, people say there's a relationship with real interest rates, but I think that is decoupling, almost like bond yields decoupled from stocks. For years they told you, you know, if you buy stocks, hedge it with some bonds, and then suddenly both of those asset classes move together and all the way down. But I think the thing is that the world is undergoing a very interesting experiment at the moment, and fiscal policy is now dominating monetary policy for the first time ever. And you can see the United States, they have a $9 trillion deficit. And I think people are losing faith in financial, in central banks around the world. And I think that is why they're hedging into gold. So don't be surprised that, you know, 2,150 odd now, but, you know, over the next year, it doesn't move towards 2,500.
It's astonishing. You were right. Okay, you were right. So, Greg, interesting story today with Mondi. Now, Mondi, of course, the JSE's biggest packaging business. And we know that the Northern Hemisphere is alive with cardboard boxes. Everybody gets stuff delivered, whether it be, you know, very thick cardboard boxes to keep things cool or light cardboard boxes for Amazon deliveries. The delivery business is strong and every delivery needs a box. Mondi's just agreed a deal to buy a rival company called DS Smith for about 100 billion rand. It's going to make it the biggest manufacturer of cardboard and packaging and boxes in Europe. I think it's going to be worth about 250 billion rand. That's a nice deal.
It's a very big deal, and Mondi shareholders will end up owning 54% of the combined company, and then Smith shareholders, they get the rest. But I must tell you, you know, you mentioned it in rands, but even it's a serious number in pounds, you know, 5.1 billion British pounds. So I always get nervous about these mega deals because there's lots of examples we can cite of companies who paid because they're paying, you know, it's a 33% premium on their price yesterday. That's chunky. So I only hope that all the synergies that they have touted that to come to pass. But as you can see, the Mondi price down on the news. The acquiring company always goes down. And, of course, Smith price was up as much as 7%. But, yeah, it remains to be seen. But these big deals do make me nervous sometimes. You know, the end is not what the shareholders imagined at the outset.
Good to have you back, Greg Katzenbergen, who is the Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
Bruce Whitfield on The Money Show.
6 to 8 p.m.
If ever there was a warning not to be caught up by FOMO, not to worry about what others are doing when they seem to be so clever and have bought an ounce of gold or have bought a Bitcoin or a piece of a Bitcoin or whatever the case might be, I wonder if you've been following NVIDIA. Rapidly became the world's third biggest company, became only the third company in history to hit $2 trillion. Well, this afternoon, the last half hour, we've seen the share price of NVIDIA, the AI-related chip maker, fall by 10% in just 30 minutes. I mean, look, it's, you know, you're still okay if you bought NVIDIA stocks a year ago. You're absolutely more than okay. But just that volatility and following trends is such a big warning in that one. Welcome to The Money Show, brought to you by Absa. Some stories are just getting started. Your story matters. Absa is a registered FSP. Well, one of the big winners this week, Sir Richard Branson. He owns Ulusaba and the Sabi Sand Game Reserve, of course, as well as the magnificent Mont Rochelle just outside French Hook. But the winner's got nothing to do with those. Rather, Virgin Money, which used to operate in South Africa and in the US, but now I think just in Britain and Australia. He'll get about 10 billion rand. Much more impressive in rand. He'll get about 10 billion rand following the Virgin Money takeover by Nationwide. It's a UK financial sector business. Nationwide eventually will get rid of the Virgin Money brand, and so it won't exist 6 years from now. But while it still uses it over the next 6 years, it'll also pay Richard Branson a royalty. Not bad for a guy who used to print a student magazine.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa. Your story should be heard. Your story matters. Absa is a registered FSP.
Welcome to The Money Show on this wonderful Friday evening. We'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. We'll also chat classic cars in just a moment. The coming up on your next Money Show, the managing director at Montego Pet Nutrition, Johan van Jaarsveld, on why he makes pet food for a living. It's how he makes money. Also, Hilary Joffe, the columnist and editor-at-large for Business Day, reviewing a book called Edible Economics, A Hungry Economist Explains the World. Looking forward to that. Plus Toby Shapshak at Stuff Studios on tech and gadgets.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
On to the Friday File this evening, and Jofan Rennan joins us, creative rides director and lead auctioneer. Talk to me about the state of the classic car, the vintage car, the auction market for older but very well-loved vehicles. Jof, good evening.
Good evening, Bruce, and many happy returns for yesterday.
What? Well, you know, everyone loves a suck-up, Jof, but thank you. Very nice of you. Very kind.
Well, I can tell you it's not just improving. The classic car collectible market is exploding.
What?
We've been following trends for a couple of years since we started auctioning, decided to change the business model at Creative Rides. And we went from selling to auctioning. And literally, I think in the last 3 years, we've peaked as of to date at about 700 cars that have come under the hammer.
And what sort of cars are these? Are these all old, I don't know, Fiat 1400 Buckies? Are they and Datsun 1400 Buckies? Are they Ford Escorts? Or are there something a little bit more on the exciting front?
It's right across the board. Everything from a Model T to the locally made South African homologated racing cars. Anything that is South African made has a huge following, both here and internationally, because we're renowned for our quality of our build. But it's at the moment, if it's German, it's hot. If it's Italian, it's hot. If it's South African made, it's hot. And everything in the middle is being pulled with it during this crazy run on the market.
What's, if we give the term, driving it?
Well, we follow global markets and specifically the largest collector car market in the world being America. The big auction month or week of the year is January in Scottsdale in Arizona. The Barrett Jackson auction event, the Mecham auction event, the RM Sotheby's auction event, where they pretty much do 80% of the annual turnover of collector cars almost globally. And we've been following their trends and watching them very, very carefully. And their trends have not only been being followed by South Africa, but in some cases we're beating prices that even the Americans are receiving on the block in America. We've watched assets that are, for instance, the old Alfa Romeo GDV 6.3 liter. In the space of 18 months, we auctioned one off, and in 18 months later, the price doubled on the auction block. So the return you're getting for these assets that you can not only look at, but drive and enjoy with your hands behind the wheel is it's probably gone up, I would say, at least 200 to 300% in the last 5 years.
Is this all hobbyists? Are these all people who've got day jobs? They're good with their hands. They love motor vehicles. They love the history. They love the legacy. They are passionate about chasing down an original washer that goes into the most inaccessible part of the car. And they'll spend years looking for that one part and years more trying to install it properly. I mean, these are dedicated maniacs for vehicles.
The petrol heads. It used to be, but we've noticed a trend that we've been watching on Haggerty that have the largest sort of database for classic cars in the world. The baby boomers have just been pipped at the post for the first time in living history. And we're now watching the young petrol heads the legacy's been passed on from their parents to them. Our millennials, our Gen X, our Gen Yers, the 35 to sort of 55-year-olds, that are now the largest buying power of the collector car market in the world. We saw that trend at our Monte Cassino collector car auction last year, about 4 months ago, when we auctioned off 200 cars. And for the first time, we had guys in their 20s and early 30s bidding for BMW 325 ISs, bidding for cars, Ford Escorts that are 20, 30 years old, even bidding for Defenders that were 30 years old. You just don't find these assets anymore.
So what classifies a car as a classic car or as a vintage car? Is there a difference between the two?
Well, I think a classic, if you want to look it up online, will probably be anything over 30 or 35 years old. But what we're now finding is that the supercar race and the sort of South African limited edition, I would say anything collectible nowadays is anything that's limited, anything that's brought out in very, very small numbers. A lot of the collectible BMWs, Ferraris, Maseratis, and a lot of South African locally made stuff as well, being our second largest industry in the country. South Africa is quite unique in being at the bottom of the continent and having so many cars here and so many cars being made over decades. And, you know, if you go back to the 50s and 60s, you know, you could buy a Ford Mustang in America and landed in South Africa at half the price because the rand was double the strength of the dollar in those days. Hang on to that asset for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and you've got a very, very, very nice investment.
It's stunning to hear all about that, Jofun Rian, and thank you. The director at Creative Rides, he's the lead auctioneer at Creative Rides as well. So certainly buoyancy in the market. Wayne McCurry, one of our regular market commentators from FNB Wealth and Investments, has a hustle. I don't know if it's a side hustle or just a hustle or a hassle, Wayne. But I mean, you for years have spoken about this passion project of yours, this love of restoring cars that most people would be ashamed to take to a scrapyard.
Well, look, Bruce, I must say sometimes it is a hassle. It can be very frustrating, but also very, very rewarding for your psyche. I mean, I'm not in cars to make money. It's not an investment of mine. I enjoy restoring the cars. I like to see the finished product. And it truly is a big passion of mine and has been for a very, very long time.
So what is the biggest project you've undertaken, the biggest personal project you've undertaken?
Well, I built a car. I built a replica of a C-type Jaguar, which was a racing Jaguar at Le Mans in the 1950s. I built it off the original blueprints for the car that I found at Furley's bookstore in the UK probably 25 years ago, and I spent many holidays, many spare times looking at these plans, thinking, and then about 4 years ago, I actually built it.
Is that the one you took on a road trip all the way to Cape Town?
No. That was another car, but the racing car is not really, it's a proper racing car. It's not really for sort of long-distance driving.
But, I mean, what keeps you going in this way? And, I mean, it's the joy of seeing the finished product. Do you actually break even on these, or is it a hobby that costs you money? Because your friend Rina telling us this is the biggest money-making thing he's come across in years.
Yeah, well, look, you've got to be a little bit cautious, you know, with classic cars. Sometimes you can make money, sometimes you don't make money, and I suppose time's a big thing. I mean, I've been quite fortunate. I've never lost money on a car, so my hobby doesn't cost me at all. And I do make a little bit of money out of the cars because they simply go up capital appreciation. So I buy cars that essentially are most of the time are wrecks. But I've got the ability, luckily enough, and the resources, lucky enough, to actually restore them. And you can make a fair profit on that.
Wayne, thank you for sharing this evening. Wayne McCurry calling us this evening. Vintage Car Restorer, they call him. He is one of our great market commentators. But if he's going to be relying on cars for a retirement, that's never going to happen. But it certainly is something that brings him a huge amount of joy. Also to Jofun Rian, thank you very much indeed, bringing us some insights into essentially the really well-used car market. Coming up in a moment, we're going to be playing the Brutal Biz Quiz. That's what we'd like to do on a Friday before we bring you the best bits between 7 and 8. I would like to know from you this evening, how many quarters of economic contraction do you need for there to be a technical recession? So if you have a quarter where the economy is negative, how many of those quarters do you need in a row for us to be calling it a technical recession? Give us a call now. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. It's Friday. It's time for the Brutal Biz Quiz. Come and play.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
So how many quarters of contraction do you need for an economy to be in a technical recession? No, in Edenvale.
Hi, Bruce, it's true.
Two is absolutely correct. The most common definition of a recession used in the media is this term technical recession, in which there have been two consecutive quarters of contraction or negative growth in GDP. We narrowly avoided a technical recession in the third and fourth quarters. We grew in the fourth quarter by 0.1%, which means we didn't go into recession. But I think it was really important that Martin Ackerman at Citadel pointed out to us that we are still in a per capita recession because our economy is growing more slowly than our population. Which local airline has got competitors complaining about the fact that it's got foreign owners?
FlySafair.
FlySafair is correct. It's got 60% market share and its competitors are getting a bit cross. Cobus Loubser took over from Andries Greiling as chief executive of which private education company?
I'm going to guess, let me see,
three, two, and
IIE?
One. No, I'm afraid not, Joe. Thank you very much for playing this evening. What about you, Hillary? Changing of the guard at this particular business. Cobus Loubser took over from Andries Greiling at which private education business?
Bruce. Advatech.
Good guess, but it's not that one. There are not that many choices, but it's not Advatech. It is not Advatech. Elijah in Orchards.
Is it the guys that are running Curo?
Curo, absolutely right. Andries Greiling resigned in January last year to go pursue other interests, and Cobus Loubser took over from him. News to me as well. Now, the chicken business that RCL plans to release onto the JSE, what is the name of the chicken business that will list on the JSE after being spun out of RCL Foods, Elijah?
Bruce, let me hand over the reins.
Pardon?
I say, I have no idea. Sorry.
You have no idea. Thank you, Elijah, very much for playing. Solly, or is it Soul? Solly? Soul? There you are.
Soul.
Which chicken business is going to be listed on the JSE?
Is it Rainbow?
It is Rainbow Chickens, absolutely right. The chicken business is complicated and expensive, and it is better off outside the fold than in. We spoke to them this week. Hendrik du Toit is the founder and still the chief executive of a company that he created in Investec 32 years ago. What is the name of the asset management company run by
91
Dutoy? My goodness me, there is no beating you this evening, Sol. You are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Congratulations to you. Absolutely. He is our shapeshifter this week. And what an interesting guy, and a guy who's hugely respected, not only in asset management in South Africa, but also in the UK. And I chatted to him in our shapeshifter feature this week about, hey, I saw you on TV. There you were with the King of England and Joe Biden during the coronation of the King last year. And yeah, he was one of like 30 CEOs from the City of London in the room. And he very modestly told us, no, well, I was only there because I was the only one who could talk about emerging markets. So that's where he was, Hendrik du Toit, our shapeshifter this evening. He joined Investec in 1991, created Investec Asset Management, and that was rebranded as 91 in the year 2020. And of course, that interview, that discussion with Hendrik du Toit is one of the many wonderful conversations that we have selected as part of our best bits of The Money Show, which comes to you just after Eyewitness News. Before we go to Eyewitness News, Private Gordon announcing plans to retire. By the time he steps down, he would have been SARS Commissioner. Tick. He would have been Finance Minister. Tick. He would have then been COGTA Minister very briefly before Jacob Zuma was forced to rehire him after that weekend special Des Van Rooyen fiasco. Then Jacob Zuma fired him. And I wonder if he wishes that he had retired back then. Anyway, after 6 years at the helm of public enterprises, those years have been less kind to him, I think, but he will not be available to return to cabinet in June. He'll be 75 by the time he steps down. Yeah, it's an astonishing innings in active politics, of course, for Pravin Gordhan. The best bits coming up next.